This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Last week, China announced major changes to the electoral system of Hong Kong. What does this mean for the future of Hong Kong's democracy? I'm joined today by Hong Kong political analyst Sunny Low to unpack the implications of these changes. Hi, Sunny. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Good morning.
China's top legislative body, the National People's Congress, unanimously approved major changes to Hong Kong's electoral system last week. Before we go into the specifics of what those changes are, what was the rationale given for this overhaul of the electoral system?
Now, the major rationale of the Chinese government to revamp the existing electoral system is several aspects. Number one, the Chinese government wants to deter all those radical localists from entering the Legislative Council. And number two, the Chinese government wants to cut the linkage between the radical legislators and the external forces, the so-called color revolution that was fostered by the foreign forces in the minds of the Chinese government. Thirdly, the Chinese government hopes to enhance the governing capacity of the Hong Kong leadership. And fourthly, the Chinese government wants to ensure that the patriotic elites would be able to govern Hong Kong so that the entire Hong Kong situation would be stable. So there are at least four major reasons why the Chinese government wanted to change the electoral system in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. So can you walk us through some of the changes that have been introduced to the electoral system?
Yes, in the past, we had a legislative council with 70 members, half of them coming from direct elections, half of them coming from functional groups. But in the future, after China's revamp of the electoral system, the new legislative council will have 90 members, 40 of them coming from the election committee, 30 of them coming from the functional groups, and only 20 of them coming from direct elections. So obviously, the Chinese government wanted to curb the influence of the Democrats while elevating the patriotic elite.
When you say election committee, what is the election committee actually?
The election committee in the past was responsible for selecting the chief executive. But now under this newly reformed system, the executive committee is composed of 1,500 members, which is responsible for selecting the chief executive and also be responsible for selecting 40 legislative councillors in the 90-member legislative council. Basically, the election committee is composed of five sectors, and in each sector, it is allocated to different interest groups affiliated with the business or grassroots or working class or different sectors. And we can expect that all these interest groups are mostly pro-Beijing. But the candidate who want to run for the election, they need the nomination of two members from each of the sector. So we can expect that the politics of nomination will become ferocious, because getting nomination is already a difficult task for the candidates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And let's take a look at the Legislative Council then. As you mentioned, the seats have been increased to 90 seats from 70 seats, but only 20 of them are appointed through the polls. The remaining 40 are through the Election Commission, as you mentioned. So what about the remainder of the seats? Where are these representatives coming from?
So 40 seats out of the 90 Legislative Council seats will come from the Election Committee, and these 40 members will be elected by the 1,500 Election Committee member. So it's a kind of indirect election. For the 30 seats of the 90-seat Legislative Council coming from the functional constituencies, so the existing professional associations like law associations, accountancy, business sector, you know, engineering, education, they will continue to elect 30 legislative councillors. But in the past, 35. But the most affected sector is the direct elections, because in the past, as I mentioned earlier, in the past 35 seats out of 70 seats, that is half of them in the past, was composed of direct elections. But in the newly revamped Legislative Council, only 22 point something of the Legislative Councillors, that is 20 out of 70, will come out from the direct elections. So it means that the Democrats, who in the past did pretty well in grasping around 55% of the vote, they will be far less influential than ever before. So the Democrats will have to get the nominations from the pro-Beijing elite first in order to enter into different sectors in the Legislative Council elections.
Mm-hmm. Another controversial requirement that's been introduced is candidates to the Legislative Council need to be vetted by two separate committees. What do we know about the screening process and how it will be carried out?
According to the National People's Congress decision and deliberation, all the candidates will need to be vetted by a so-called Candidates Eligibility Review Committee. And before this eligibility committee meets and decides the eligibility of candidates, it will receive reports from, number one, the National Security Department of the Hong Kong Police, and number two, the report from the Committee for Safeguarding National Security set up by the Hong Kong SAR government in accordance with the national security law. So in other words, all the candidates will be screened from a kind of a national security perspective by this eligibility committee, no matter whether they will be Legislative Council candidates or even chief executive candidates. So I think the idea of the central government in Beijing is to make sure that all those candidates running for elections, both Legislative Council and chief executive elections, will meet the patriotic criteria. And in the past, the responsibility of screening the candidates was given to government civil servants, namely the election officer responsible for handling the candidate's eligibility. So the new system is to minimize the burden on the senior civil servants and shift the responsibility to an institutionalized eligibility committee, which receives reports from the police and also the Committee for Safeguarding National Security. So in a sense, this is a kind of double or triple screening mechanism to ensure the patriotic criteria of candidates will be met.
What is the definition of a patriot exactly? What does it mean for a candidate to pass this national security vetting?
Yeah, according to the director of the Hong Kong Macau Affairs Office, Zha Baolong, the patriotism criteria includes, number one, those who support the sovereignty, developmental interests, and national security interests of the central government. And number two, they support Hong Kong's one country, two system. And number three, they cannot do anything to undermine national security. So some of these criteria appear to be a little bit ambiguous, but I think they are going to judge the candidates' remarks and actions. Openly or even in their Facebook, you know, and in terms of action, they will take a closer look at the previous action and activities of the candidates. So in the past, when some candidates were disqualified, they were judged in terms of their remarks and also actions. So I think the eligibility committee will take a closer look at both the remarks and the activities of the candidates concerned.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to Sunny Low, a political scientist in Hong Kong. Up next, what do these changes mean for the protest movement that made global headlines in 2019? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Hello, I'm Shazana Mukhtar, and this is Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Today, I'm speaking to Sunny Low, a political scientist in Hong Kong, to find out how changes to the electoral system there will impact the democracy movement. How has the Hong Kong public received the news of these electoral changes? What has the reaction on the street been?
The people of Hong Kong appear to be divided over all these political changes because some Hong Kong people who are traditionally pro-democracy and liberal are pretty frightened of all the changes, especially after the implementation of the national security law. There has been already, you know, emigration in some crucial sectors like the educators, secondary school, you know, teachers, as well as some IT professionals. Even in the civil service, there were rumors that some civil servants who are pro-democracy decided to migrate. But I think, you know, the migration issue will not affect Hong Kong substantially because still a majority of Hong Kong people will stay here. For migration, of course, some other Western countries like UK, United States, Canada, Australia have already dished out the so-called lifeboat policy for the people of Hong Kong to migrate. And so it has been anticipated that at least 500,000 Hong Kong people may migrate in the coming 2 or 3 years or 5 years. But people come and go, you know, people may leave Hong Kong and then return to Hong Kong. But given the fact that the central government in Beijing is encouraging Hong Kong to integrate with the Greater Bay Area, a kind of migration from Hong Kong to Greater Bay Area on the one hand, and also migration from the mainland to Hong Kong on the other, will take place in the coming 5 to 10 years. So Hong Kong will change quite significantly in terms of demographics, and we will anticipate a Hong Kong being integrated into the mainland socially and also in terms of migration in the coming 5 to 10 years.
Do you think that we'll see the protest movement? What's ahead for them? Are we going to see street protests again, especially in, you know, in the upcoming anniversary of the handover on 1st July, which has traditionally been a day of street demonstrations? Has the national security law curbed that kind of activity moving forward?
I think because with the implementation of the national security law, it is really powerful and having a kind of deterrent effect on the protesters. So in the short run, I don't see the possibility of protesters coming out again, you know, because the protest activists were already divided into several groups. The first group already left Hong Kong for UK or even Taiwan, or even other places. The second group of them adopt a very low profile, you know, and they are even frightened to speak out, you know, in social media. So now they are hiding. The third group tend to be the former leaders who are now under arrest and prosecution. And so I think given the fact that the protest leaders are now having very hard time, and I don't think, you know, in the short run, there will be protests again. I think the entire electoral system, by excluding the Democrats and the radicals into the existing system, there are advantages and disadvantages. The advantage is to stabilize Hong Kong substantially, especially, you know, harmonizing the relationship between the executive and the legislature. But one possible disadvantage is that unless the Hong Kong government leadership capability will be significantly improved, unless the livelihood issues like housing and land issues will really be solved out, otherwise some disgruntled people may still be excluded from the political system, and when they are unhappy, they may resort to protest, even though there is a national security law. So it remains to be seen how things will unfold. But in general, I think the Hong Kong situation is stabilized. For those people who are unhappy, For those people who are feeble, they have no choice but to exit. But for those people who accept the reality, they will stay here and observe.
Mm-hmm. One final question, Sunny, and this is regarding the future of democracy in Hong Kong. Chief Executive Carrie Lam did say that democracy comes in different forms, but I suppose to an outsider, it seems hard to defend given the wide-ranging changes to the law that limits the diverse political representation. So should the government give up the facade of holding democracy? And does this notion of one country, two systems, does it still hold for Hong Kong?
There are two things, one on the future of democracy, the other one on one country, two systems. Now, on the future of democracy, what is interesting about the National People's Congress decision is that the August 31st, 2014 parameter decided by the Standing Committee of the NPC still remains. And in August 2014, the Standing Committee of the NPC decides that in the future, if the chief executive would be directly elected by citizens, there would be 2 to 3 candidates screening out from an election committee first, and then that 2 to 3 candidates would still be directly elected by the people of Hong Kong. Now, at that time, in 2014 and 2015, China's policy towards Hong Kong was relatively liberal, relatively tolerant. Unfortunately, the Democrats at that time in Hong Kong, they were very hardline and they rejected this excellent opportunity to accept a model of direct election of the chief executive through universal suffrage. Now, the point here is that the current electoral change doesn't really affect this standing committee decision back in August 2014. So in other words, theoretically speaking and practically speaking, if the central government in Beijing feels confident and politically safe about Hong Kong's development in the coming years, then this August 2014 decision may be raised again, not in the short run, but in the medium and long term. So in that sense, democratization of Hong Kong would still be theoretically and practically possible, but we have to rely on the patriotic elites to perform well, to show to Beijing that the people of Hong Kong are politically safe, are politically, loyal to the central government enough so that there will be direct election of the chief executive. So the future of democracy is still there, but in terms of the democratization of the Legislative Council, we cannot expect an easy change back to the situation when the Legislative Council had half of the members directly elected, and that possibility will be very difficult. With regard to one country, two systems, I think what has been happening in Hong Kong in the past several years has ironically stimulated the people of Taiwan to reject the one country, two system, although the Chinese government has recently emphasized the Taiwan model of one country, two system for Taiwan. So I think the challenge of the Chinese government, which is very eager to deal with Taiwan in the short run, especially in light of President Xi Jinping's agenda on Taiwan, I think there will be a hard time for the Chinese officials to sell the one country, two system to Taiwan. So unless the central government policy towards Hong Kong may be softened in the coming years, otherwise, the Taiwan issue will be quite difficult to be resolved, especially when we approach the 2024 Taiwan presidential election. Currently, Taiwan is still governed by the DPP, Democratic Progressive Party, which rejects the so-called 1992 consensus between the KMT, between the Kuomintang and the Chinese Communist Party. So to answer your question, I think the one country, two system in Hong Kong is going to be stabilized in the short run. But the problem is how to sell the so-called Taiwan model of one country, two system to Taiwan. So I think if the next target of the Chinese government is Taiwan, then we will have to observe how situation will unfold.
Thanks very much, Sunny, for your time and insights. I've been speaking to political scientist Sunny Low on the political situation in Hong Kong in the wake of sweeping changes to its electoral system. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.